from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Evan and Tiki here on The Fan. If you go all the way back to April, the idea that Clay Holmes would need to be replaced as Yankee closer was not completely foreign. In fact, Sean Morash did a Cinco de Five-O all the way back on April 4th to the day. Today's September 4th, April 4th. So that was, April is the number 4, September is the number 9. 5 months ago.
Yankees hadn't played a home game yet.
5 months ago, and they hadn't played a home game yet. And Sean decided to unveil a Cinco de Five-O that was labeled the five likeliest guys to be closing games for the Yankees in October. Isn't that crazy?
Very.
And so I think this
you
will be...
You could tell. Yeah, we could all see it coming.
I mean, he could tell. That's for damn sure. So I thought it would be a good thought exercise for all of us to listen to said Cinco from all the way back in April and hear if any of the guys he mentions are actually really good ideas that maybe we didn't think about. So, ladies and gentlemen, let's go into a time machine. We take you all the way back to April 4th, 2024, when Sean Morash unveiled his Cinco de Five-O, five likeliest Yankee closer options in October.
The Yankees closed out their improbable 6-1 start to the year. We saw a little crack, a little glimmer of what could be a big problem. That's Clay Holmes' closing game. Oh, so I'm going to give you the five most likely closers for the Yankees come October. All right, here we go.
Already. Here we go!
Number five.
5-1, dude.
6-1.
6-1.
Look, I just want to get ahead of the problem, all right?
All right, go ahead.
Number five. Don't freak out. Luis Gil.
I don't think that's crazy at all.
Hear me out. Still not fully a three-pitch pitcher. Electric 100-mile-an-hour stuff. An innings limit. If that's the way, once they get some of these starters back, they get him cooking, maybe he's the perfect arm out of there.
Gerrit Cole comes back. Yeah. Now you don't necessarily need him as a rotation guy. And that's not bad.
I think that's higher on my list.
Number four.
Robert Suarez.
We're making trades now.
Yeah.
Number three.
Ian Hamilton.
Yeah.
Boy, he looks spicy out of there.
Yesterday.
Oh, another fine for Brian Cashman in that pen. And he kind of has closer stuff.
Oh, no doubt. He looks great.
Number two.
It's Clay Holmes. I think he's still the strongest in-house candidate.
Wait, what was the name of the Cinco? I thought it was to replace Clay Holmes.
No. Most likely closers for the Yankees come October.
Okay, so you have him at number two.
Like that, ultimately, Clay Holmes still figures it out and keeps the job at number two.
Wait. Number one.
Edwin Diaz.
All right. All right, so let's go through this and see if any of these things stick.
It was set up as a troll. Clearly.
Oh, you think it was all just to troll the Mets?
I mean, that's the premise of it. I mean, there was some...
Convenient into the premise.
Right, exactly right. It was convenient. Because clearly you were trying to troll Evan a week into the MLB season because Edwin Diaz was not the Edwin Diaz that everybody expected him to be.
So before Evan tackles us, two things were both true. I did not trust Clay Holmes early on, and this stems from even last year.
You said it.
Number two, I saw the Met problems. I thought maybe they solved the deadline.
No, and look, when they were 6-1, I think back to the first game of the season. Didn't Clay Holmes essentially blow the save, but Juan Soto made the great throw to the plate?
Yep.
And then I think he blew a game in Arizona that they ended up winning.
That Caleb Ferguson bailed them out of.
Right. So I think it was just early, and it was, this is a little shaky.
Yeah.
So I don't think that idea was that out there. Now, some of these names have obviously been eliminated. Edwin Diaz is the closer of the New York Mets, but Lugie and I are deeply honored that you would think that highly of him.
Of course.
Unfortunately, he's ours.
Yes.
He's not yours.
The deadline was tomorrow. I don't think I'd put him in my top five right now, but either way.
The other guy was Robert Suarez, which was a great idea. Problem is, he wasn't traded, and he's having a hell of a year for San Diego.
It would have been nice.
Yes,
then you've got Ian Hamilton. Mm. Ian Hamilton, after that spicy start, as you said, pitched to a 4.5 ERA and is hurt. So,
yeah, we'll scratch it off. I didn't know Jake Cousins was a thing yet.
You didn't know it was a thing yet. And then the other guy you mentioned was Luis Gil.
No. He mentioned Clay Holmes.
Oh, he mentioned Clay Holmes, right. I forgot about him.
Clay Holmes was number two on the list.
I think we have to
clearly
admit.
Clearly, you can eliminate that one.
Yeah, I think right now we have to admit that. Yeah. We have to get rid of that. So the guy was Luis Gil, who we had thought about for a long time.
Right.
As a possibility.
You might be right in this. Your fifth option, your fifth most likely pick. Now, the first two of them were kind of trollish, but whatever. The fifth most likely pick is probably the one that that most fans would be most comfortable with.
Above anything else, what I was right about is we saw the cracks early on that this was going to be a talking point.
Right.
What I'm intrigued about with Luis Gil and Clark Schmidt, and I apologize for sticking them together, but I am sticking them together because they are both young starting pitchers coming back from injury who have not fully established themselves. And that's where the similarities are and why I bring them up together. What I'm very intrigued by is the weapon of seventh inning. You just got a really solid performance out of Marcus Stroman. It's 4-2 in the sixth. Not even the seventh inning. Mm-hmm. 4-2 in the sixth inning, and you need to get a big out. There's two on, two out. And you go to, let's say, Luis Gil or Clark Schmidt, either one of them, and they get the big strikeout. You are in no rush to take that guy out of the game.
You don't need to.
You don't need to. It's like the Jose Budo factor that the Mets have had. And I'm intrigued by that because come postseason time, that can be an amazing weapon with all the off days that are built in throughout the postseason. So you have a guy in Schmidt or Gil that can not only get you the biggest out of the game, which sometimes isn't the ninth inning, it's actually in the seventh inning or the sixth inning, but then can continue pitching.
Yeah, the thing you got to do now, though, is get those guys trying to pitch every other day, and then ultimately every day.
Well, that's the test. That's why it's something they're going to have to do soon.
Right. Otherwise, you're just going to run it forward with the guy that you have.
Right.
And Clay Holmes, and that's not going to work.
Right. You've got to throw another arm into this bullpen mix. You've got a couple of guys that are decent. Sean's high on Jake Cousins. I'm a little higher on Tommy Canley. Like, you've got guys, and even Clay Holmes isn't going to be fully eliminated. He's still going to be there. He's still going to be asked to get a big out. May not be the ninth inning, but it may be the seventh inning. What moving Gil or Schmidt does is it gives you one other target, one other guy that you're throwing out there. So, yeah, it was a good list. Hmm? You really had a lot of foresight on April 4th to say, oh, crap, we're screwed.
Needed the Padres to bottom out. Maybe Suarez would have been.
That was the
ironically, they added another closer.
Look what it did for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing all right. We'll see if they make the playoffs. There's no guarantee.
No guarantee.
If they finish a game up on the Mets, you know which game to blame.
Nah, listen, man. That is true. That's the problem with these brutal losses. Same for the Yankees, same for the Mets. You lose by a game, there are so many losses that you could just pick and say, that's the one. Let's go to Jim in Bordentown. What's up, Jim?
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
Good, man. What's up?
Not much. So I think you've touched on a lot of my points, but it all harkens back to the Yankees on a whole just being mismanaged. And I feel like as a fan base, we watch day in and day out. Like, this poll was put together in April. But at the trade deadline, nobody in the Yankees front office thinks to go look for a closer when Clay Holmes, he looks the part of a two guys on in the seventh inning. We need a ground ball with one out. Bring him in, try and throw a double play. But for the entire season and most of last season, it's been high leverage ninth innings created by himself. And he struggles to get three outs in a row. He struggles to get swing and miss. And when guys are putting the ball in play on a consistent basis in the ninth inning, bad things happen.
So
when you look back,
the one thing, Jim, I would disagree on, and you can still bitch about it, but I would disagree on the way you framed it, is they weren't looking for bullpen help. Mm-hmm. I think they were. I think the Yankees drew a line in the sand.
Yeah.
I think during the offseason when we had arguments about Josh Hader, no jokes, the argument that Tiki and Sean used against me was money and said, hey, they want to re-sign Juan Soto in a year. Mm-hmm. You can't give a closer $100 million. Understand where you guys are coming from.
Some of those closers that we're talking about, they want a new deal.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whops and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Right.
And that's just not going to happen with Juan Soto's still hanging in the balance.
Well, in the Hader case, it was about money. And I think most Yankee fans would say, screw it. The Yankees are worth $7 billion. Who cares? Go sign them. I think in the more recent case, when it came to the trade deadline, they were looking to add relievers. The relievers are expensive when it comes to prospects, and Cashman didn't want to give them up.
Especially in the middle of the season, because everybody knows that that's what every team needs.
But
every team is trying to make a run for it. They want relievers, and so they become more expensive. And
but
so
think
unless
about
you're
this.
Committed to it, which the Yankees are not, and we heard Hal Steinbrenner even say this. I mean, we're not signing everybody. We're not paying everybody.
But this wasn't about money. This was about prospects. In the middle of the season, it was about prospects. During the offseason, it was about money. The San Diego Padres, you know, the team that traded the Yankees, Juan Soto?
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that traded for Tanner Scott. So think about what the Padres did. The Padres said, we're not paying Juan Soto. We're going to trade him. We're going to take a little bit of a step back, even though we're going to improve our pitching, getting Michael King, the other pieces they got. And they're the team that gave up more in prospect capital to get multiple relievers, but for this argument, Tanner Scott, and the Yankees said, too expensive for us.
Yes, and now they're the top wild card team, 3.5 games ahead of the Mets.
And where would the Yankees be if they had traded for Tanner Scott, assuming he would have been pitching effectively? The answer is a few games better.
Right. They'd have maybe not the division wrapped up, but you'd feel a lot more comfortable than
so
you are right now.
So they made decisions, and I hate going back on it because it sucks. There's nothing you could do. It was a month and a half ago. But they made decisions during the offseason when it came to finances and during the season when it came to prospects to not go that extra mile to improve their bullpen. It's not that they weren't trying. It's that they weren't willing to go as far as what the cost was going to take them. And that's for all of us to say, well, they were stupid. So answer that yourself. Sean, were they stupid for not giving up the top echelon prospects they needed to give up to get Tanner Scott?
Yes, they were.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were they stupid for not giving Josh Hader $95 million?
The prospect,
that I can't say.
Yeah, the prospect thing is interesting because you know you need to win, or you want to win now. This is the all-in season, right? That's what we've heard from the very beginning of this campaign.
That's what we've said. It's turned out not to be the case.
You're right. Well, I think you're right. I think they were trying to sign relievers at the trade deadline. The deals just weren't right for them.
Right.
Like, teams probably wanted Jason Dominguez, right? They probably wanted the top prospects for the Yankees, and they're just not willing to give those guys up because they're under team control and the money, it benefits them monetarily down the road. And so I can't say they weren't willing to do these deals. They just weren't able to do these deals.
No, they weren't willing. And I'm not saying they should have been willing, because if the ask is Jason Dominguez or Spencer Jones for a reliever,
no.
I'd have a tough time making that deal too, but they made a decision to not make those moves.
Well, furthermore, which is a word I don't even know if I'm using right, what makes this so compounding is their lack of urgency to ever call up these guys. Now, I wouldn't say trade Jason Dominguez because we at least tasted him last year.
Yeah.
But look at how hard it's getting to call up Jason Dominguez this year to help the team. So why would I give a damn about trading Spencer Jones or 2 years ago if they would have dealt like Oswaldo Peraza? I've just seen too much of these prospects either not panning out or the Yankees treating them with kid gloves. That why are we doing that? If we're not going to see them, you might as well deal them for the real talent now.
I asked the question 10 minutes ago, how will the Yankees season end? And I brought this up a few weeks ago after Clay's 10th blown save. We do it again after his 11th blown save. How will their season end? Will it end with a world championship? Will it end with their offense no-showing in the playoffs? Will it end with bad starting pitching? Or will it end with their bullpen failing them? Do you want to know the results? You want to guess the results?
It's probably still offense.
It is very close between offense and bullpen.
Wow.
Now it is neck and neck. 40% offense, 39% say bullpen. Only 13% say they win the World Series, 8% say starting pitching. Which shows you they got some confidence in their starting pitching right now. But it comes down to no show from offense or bullpen fails them. Here's the thing about the offense. The offense has mostly been good, especially when healthy, especially when Giancarlo's out there, especially after the trade for Jazz Chisholm. But there's that inner fear
that the thing that's harmed them before is going to harm them again.
Yeah, it's going to rear its ugly head as soon as you need it most. Aaron Judge, you know, regardless of how great his regular season is, which he's on pace for 60 home runs again, and Juan Soto, one of the best players in baseball, once you get to the postseason, we're going to see the same thing over and over again.
That's the fear.
It's irrational because it doesn't, nothing tells you that that's going to actually be the case, but history, and people believe history, even though it has zero bearing on what's going to happen in the future.
Let's go to Fernando in Tom's River. How you doing, Fernando?
I'm doing well, guys. Hope you guys are doing well, too.
We are. Thank you, man.
Very good. So I'm going to get right to it. In the world of launch angle, the sinker doesn't work. I'm really upset about the way that Holmes is attacking hitters. If I'm digging in, and I've been lucky enough to be around some successful big league hitters, if I'm digging in, I'm looking in one zone. Right, I have yet to see Clay Holmes take a 95 mile an hour fastball and throw up. If I could lay off the slider and I attack low in the zone, and all I'm really trying to do is lift, which, let's face it, 75% of the hitters are trying to do that today, right. I'm going to get lucky and I'm going to hit a ball out of the ballpark. So I would love to see Matt Blake and company you know, throw that four seamer, and honestly, I haven't even seen one.
He doesn't throw it.
Yeah, he doesn't.
He literally throws. He literally throws his sinker 55% of the time, which, when he's bouncing and he's falling behind hitters, makes him have to come in and basically throw a slider up, which is exactly what Wyatt Langford hit last night.
Yep.
He throws that slider and he throws that sweeper. That's it. Those are his three pitches. And when he's not throwing his sinker for strikes and he's falling behind hitters like he was doing all night last night, bad things happen. What's funny about Clay Holmes is that he hasn't really given up home runs. That was only the third home run he'd given up all season long.
No, you're
right. It hasn't been the homer that's killed him. It's been the walks and the bad luck of ground balls finding homes.
It's just been, it's been the traffic. But what he was saying still applies. If you know that Clay Holmes is throwing low in the zone, you're just going to swing low.
Right.
Maybe you don't hit home runs, but you're going to hit it hard. And that's kind of been his Achilles heel. Because there's two options here. You're right, sinker or slider.
Which is why when you get the early signs that he is not throwing strikes consistently and he's falling behind hitters and he's bouncing his sinker like we saw last night, what you have to do, I'll tell you a secret, Aaron, get his ass out of the game.
Mm-hmm.
Get him out. Now, tonight's easy. He's not available. He's pitched in back-to-back days. So no worries about tonight. But moving forward, this weekend in Chicago against the Cubs, what is Aaron Boone going to do about it? Because the one thing we all know is what he can't do is run Clay Holmes out there again without having any kind of thought of, let me take him out if he runs into trouble. Now, what the Yankees have tonight is a rubber game of this three-game series against Texas, and they have been bad in these rubber games lately. They're 6-9 in their last 15 rubber games. True story. Marcus Stroman on the mound tonight against the former Yankee Nate Eovaldi. We'll get back to calls in a bit, 888-808-1019. We are now about 24 hours away from week one officially beginning, and the pressure starts to mount on the New York Jets and the New York Giants. Why these games to start the year are so important, I'll make you the case.
As excited as I am for that.
That's tomorrow.
That's tomorrow. Jeez, I can't wait. I wonder what it is.
As excited as I am for that, I'm very, very excited for the NFL to start. And this is not hyperbolic. I think it's backed up by the reality of the last 2 years. You know, baseball starts, basketball starts. The first game is really, really exciting, but it's symbolic.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't even matter if you win or not. Like, think about it.
It's true.
Think about what the Yankees did on opening day. It was this incredible win against the Astros. And right now, does any Yankee fan give a damn about it?
Well, yeah, because they swept that series, and then they took 6 out of 7, right?
That's true, but most Yankee fans are afraid of the Astros.
Yeah, they are.
So it's nice. It was fun. It doesn't really kind of mean anything. That didn't necessarily set the tone for the year. Same with the Mets. The Mets had that kind of ugly loss to Milwaukee where Jeff McNeil was crying like a baby and Rhys Hoskins owned them over the weekend, and the Mets ended up getting swept, and, you know, that's like a distant memory. So baseball to me and basketball, same thing. It's like symbolic. It's exciting. You missed the season.
Hockey, same thing.
It's all the same.
None of them mean anything.
I believe in football. Not every time, but I'm going to give you two examples of it recently, where a game to start a year sets the absolute tone for a season. And I remember sitting with you a year ago, our very first Football Friday,
And I said to you guys, I don't mean to be hyperbolic here, this giant Cowboy game coming up is monstrous. It's huge. It's really going to set the tone for the year. And you were like, Ev, you know, you got to calm down. I mean, yeah, it's Giants Cowboys. It's fun. I'm excited. But, you know, it's really not. It turned out that it did.
Well,
it did.
It did because of what occurred. Not the blowout, but the injuries that derailed the rest of the Giants.
All of the above.
Yes.
All of the above. I would obviously agree on the injuries. Mm-hmm. Andrew Thomas injuring his hamstring absolutely set the tone for the season. But I would actually argue that everything about that game set the tone for the season we're about to watch. Because one of my critiques of Brian Daboll a year ago was I didn't think he showed the same guts as a year earlier. And I thought that tone was set very early in that game against Dallas. I think the offensive line struggles. The tone was set in that game against Dallas. And quite frankly, I don't think the Giants, for a myriad of reasons, injuries included, ever recovered from the first game of the season a year ago against the Dallas Cowboys.
No, they didn't. They didn't physically recover. And you could tell from a confidence standpoint, Daniel Jones was he was lost.
Yes.
All of a sudden, his ability to look and make plays downfield was turned into I'm running from my life 3 seconds into my drop back.
Yes.
And, yeah, is that his fault? Sure, in some regards. Yes, get rid of the football or scramble. Find ways to be creative. But at the same time, that line was so abysmal.
No, I get you.
I felt bad for him, and then he got hurt, and then it got worse.
Yeah.
There are two tackles that from that point forward until he hurt his neck are basically not playable on this current Giant roster as backups now. Furthermore, Ev, the year before opening day set the tone.
I haven't gotten there yet. I was going there next.
Well, this is what happens when you don't prep us.
No, it's good and bad. Like, well, you should pay attention. It's good and bad. Like, the bad is last year. The tone was set in a bad way.
Yep.
The good is a year earlier, the tone was absolutely set by the first week of the year. And that's why I talk about Brian Daboll's confidence, or I guess I should say his aggressiveness last year as compared to the year before. We all remember how that game in Tennessee ended with Brian Daboll saying, screw it, I'm going for the win.
Yep.
And it worked, and they won, the second week of the year, and the Giants were off and running. And I fully believe that if they fail on that two-point conversion, or Daboll just doesn't go for that, and they say they kick an extra point and lose in overtime, I am convinced the season plays out very differently.
Hmm.
I really believe, and there's no way for me to prove that.
Yeah.
It's just a feeling of tone-setting moment that they had 2 years ago. So, yes, the New York Giants are the prime example that week one cannot be overstated.
Well, in the NFL,
what it can do for a season.
In the NFL, it defined you. Because, let's face it, every team is delusional in the preseason. Every team. Every fan base. Maybe not all the fan base, but a lot of the fan bases and every team, for a fact, is delusional in the preseason. You're saying, well, this could be our year. We could figure it out this year, even though we sucked for the last however many seasons we've been out there. But every team believes that they have a chance at the beginning of an NFL season. And depending on how week one goes, it changes somewhat. If you get blown out, it's like, all right, we got a lot of work to do. If you just lose a tight one, it's like, all right, we're kind of there. If you win, it's like, God, dude, we're on our way.
That's right.
Now, so it's just like that delusion takes many forms post week one.
It's so funny.
Whereas in baseball, to your point, it's like, whatever. We got 161 more of these.
You've got
to go.
So many. And a lot of times they don't set the tone at all for the season. Mets fans will be the first one to tell you. They always win on opening day. And then things go badly after that. The example of the opposite, because I do want to be equal opportunity on this. Yes, the last 2 years for the New York Giants, week one has set the tone for the season, to me, very accurately. Losing 40-0 to the Dallas Cowboys set the tone for last year's failures. Beating Tennessee on the road the way they did, going for two, set the tone for the shocking playoff season. The one year that jumps out at me, or even when I think back on it, I smile and I cry all at the same time, was the 2018 New York Jets. Do you guys have any memories of how that season started and why I would bring that up?
2018
The 2018 New York Jets.
So that was six seasons ago.
Yes.
I do not.
Because this is the example that tones aren't always set the first week of the year.
Was that when they beat Detroit on Monday night?
Yes.
But Darnold also threw a pick to start his career?
Yes. Sam Darnold threw a pick six to start his NFL career against the Detroit Lions. It's Monday night football. Jets are opening up the season. And right away, Sam throws a pick to, what's his name? Diggs. Quandre Diggs. Right?
Oh, yeah.
And then the Jets proceed to just kick ass. Sam plays a great game. They run the ball effectively, and they annihilate the Lions 48 to something, okay? So I remember coming out of that game peacocking a little bit like, we got our quarterback.
Oh, that sounds familiar.
Does it? And I'm like, wow, what a tone set, especially the way he recovered. Imagine doing a pick six to start your NFL career, and then you respond that way. And then the Jets proceeded to go 4-12. I'm not even joking. So sometimes the tone isn't accurately set with the beginning of a season. The Jets last year is kind of confounding because they won a great game, but the tone was set negatively based on Aaron Rodgers tearing his Achilles.
Yeah, you just knew that there was a run it back feel from the season ago once Aaron got hurt, despite the improved roster.
Yes.
Right, despite that there, because in the NFL, you can win with a, I don't know, Punch and Judy quarterback. You can't win with one who seems lost.
Mm.
And Zach was just lost.
Right.
It just is what it is.
But you're right. I think after Rodgers got hurt and they won this incredible game. I mean, anyone who was in that building that night will tell you it was amazingly loud when Aaron came on the field. It was incredibly quiet when he tore his Achilles. But then when they won the game on an overtime punt return for a touchdown, the place was shaking.
Right.
And it felt like a home stadium for the first time ever. I think after the news of Rodgers kind of sunk in a little bit, it became, okay, we are running it back from a year earlier, and we're going to see if they can make that improvement. So here's my point related to the Giants more than the Jets. I kind of think that the Giants are on the same boat they've been the last 2 years. I think what happens on Sunday at MetLife Stadium against a Minnesota Viking team that is starting, coincidentally, Sam Darnold at quarterback, I think this is the kind of game that's going to tell us everything we need to know about this team. I think it really is a tone-setting kind of game because the Vikings are a beatable team. They're a flawed team.
Yeah.
And I think if
they have some talent, but yes, they're a flawed team.
They got the best wide receiver on the planet,
yep.
And you've got a secondary that may have some trouble stopping them. Like, I get it, but I also think if you don't win this game, I think we're looking at another long, dark season. I think if you win this game, it'll feel a lot like 2022.
So much for me is going to be what it looks like. I don't know what this Giant team offensively, really kind of defensively as well, with now the addition of Brian Burns, is actually going to look like. Right? How explosive is Dabes going to be or attempt to be? Because I don't know if he's going to take shots down the field, but are they going to be completed?
Right.
Is Malik Nabers or Jalen Hyatt, are they going to make plays down the field? I have no idea. But I know that Dabes, who confirmed yesterday that he is going to call plays, is going to be aggressive. That's where he made his hay, right? We saw it up in Buffalo. We saw it via Kafka in year one. And now I don't say he's fighting for his job, but he's fighting for consistency and relevancy in his way of doing things. And so he's taking over play calling duties because he wants to get control back onto this offense and the vision that he has for this team. And so the Minnesota Vikings, yes, are they beatable? Sure. But guess what? So are the Giants.
No, I get that. So, but
it's a matchup of two beatable teams. And I hate to say it that way, but that's really what it is.
But that's more of a reason why it's so important, because there's going to be games on this schedule, especially when you get inside the division and you take on Dallas on that Thursday night or Philadelphia, despite, my concerns on how good they're going to be. Or even later in the season, when you look at some of the tougher matchups that aren't going to be as winnable. And that's why, to me, week one is a tone setter. You're in your own building against a team with major questions.
Yeah.
Against a quarterback that has now proven he is just a bouncing around quarterback in the NFL in Sam Darnold. That's what he is. He's a journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
We can call him that now.
Right.
And so I think when you look at who they're facing, where they're facing them, they're their healthiest right now. Because I got a spoiler alert. Guys are going to get hurt. It's the freaking NFL. It's going to happen. And we're going to hear those excuses. Well, this guy's hurt, that guy's hurt. This, to me, is a very, very, very important game. And I think when we're sitting here on Monday, we're going to have a much better idea of what kind of season we're looking at.
Of course.
I really do. I wouldn't say that about every team in week one, but I certainly feel that way about the Giants, and partially because of the last 2 years and the fact that week one has set the tone, but also because they're facing a beatable team.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not beating the Minnesota Vikings at home, where are seven or eight wins coming from?
Yeah, well, it depends on what your expectation is. If you think this Giants team's going to stink, which a lot of people do, going to win four or five games, then losing to the Minnesota Vikings is par for the course, so to speak.
I don't think anyone really wants to feel that way starting a season. They may predict it, but they don't want to feel it.
No, you don't, especially, not in and around the organization. And so But there is still a lot to prove for this team. Like, this offensive line is remade in a sense. There's so many different starting pieces here from a year ago. Illuminor is playing, you know, right tackle, and Andrew Thomas is now back. And it doesn't feel like they've done it together yet, even though they had the preseason. And so I don't know what to expect. Like, I don't know what it's going to look like. I don't know what the Brian Burns impact is going to be on the defensive side of the ball. I know that their secondary is going to struggle because they're young. And so what does Shane Bowen do to make them feel safe and comfortable? Do they stop the run? They got gashed a year ago. Like, all of these things they have to do before you can really determine what this team is going to be like or what it's going to look like in 2024.
You're nervous. I could tell in your eyes.
Not nervous. It's more anxious.
Yeah, you know what happened? Tiki did the opposite of what most people do. They don't have a lot of confidence in their team. Mm-hmm. Then we get closer to the season and you get like these muscles. Like, yeah, we're going to be good. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the start of the year. You want to be optimistic.
Right.
You're going the other way. You said, because I remember a few weeks ago, you're like, you know what? I think they're going to win nine games. They're going to be better than what people think.
No, I do think they're going to win nine games.
Do you though?
I do, but I don't know what it's going to look like. If they go out and they beat the Minnesota Vikings and it's just comfortably beat down, right? Singletary, Motor does his deal, scores two touchdowns. Malik Nabers has a 60-yard catch and run for a touchdown. It's just like, man, this thing is click. This is exactly how Dabes envisioned it. I'll say that they're easily getting to nine games. Now, if they grind their way to a victory, by the way, they did that a lot last year.
Yeah.
And that's the DNA of Dabes and all the teams that he's had. They're going to grind. So if they grind their way past the Minnesota Vikings, I'm going to be like, yeah, it's going to be a tough struggle to get their nine games.
I will say, I don't think, if you win week one against the Minnesota Vikings at MetLife Stadium, I don't give a damn if it's 9-6, 35-7.
Are they supposed to?
Are the
Giants supposed to win this game?
So the way I would phrase it.
I don't even know what Vegas is.
Right now, I think Vikings are half a point or a point favorite. It's gone back and forth.
In my mind, the Giants are supposed to win this game.
I agree. And I think here's the way I look at it. If you're going to have a season, they better win this game. That's the way I look at it. If you're going to have a real season.
To me, it's what it looks like.
If they win, it doesn't matter what it looks like. If they win, now you tell me that they lose 55-10 versus 23-20 in overtime, of course there's a difference there.
Yes.
But if they win the football game, I don't think it matters.
Hmm.
Then I think we're all sitting here Monday saying, oh, we may have a football season. This guy will be crying about Daniel Jones going to the Hall of Fame.
No, I won't be crying. What scares me is what Tiki said, the young secondary. I keep going back to a year we compare every year to 07. Those first two games under Spags, they were torched with a young secondary
And Spags is a great
seat. Corey Webster, Aaron, they were torched. And the Giants just can't they could afford it versus the Packers and Cowboys that year. They can't afford to be getting torched and not winning these two games.
By Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison.
Right.
Like they have
Addison
a good receiving core.
Yes.
Oh, he is out. That's
and no Hockenson either. And remember, the Vikings don't have Danielle Hunter. The Giants got to win this game.
Right.
So you agree with me. This is a tone setter.
Yeah, Hunter's in Houston.
That's my point, though. Yeah. Everybody we thought was, other than Justin Jefferson, is not playing in this game. Mm. This is beyond a must-win in a week one.
Beyond the must. See, we're speaking the same language. And I don't want to be that crazy about 1 week, because obviously, mathematically,
but they're dogs for some reason.
Yeah, but they're minor dogs. They're like
it doesn't matter.
They're actual dogs, and that's why they're going to win the game.
Because they're actual
dogs. I mean, Tiki brought up a great point there. You just named all the guys that are out for Minnesota. It's Sam Darnold, whatever you want to say about the guy, on the road, and you're underdogs.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
It means someone knows something.
Oh, stop. Don't give me this crap. Someone knows what?
So, are there any other teams at home this week that are underdogs?
No, but what are you implying?
What I'm implying is that Vegas doesn't think the Giants are going to be a good football team.
Nobody thinks the Giants are going to be a good football team.
Okay, but if you can't win this game, and again, positive Tommy, they'll probably win 11 games like I predicted, but when you're underdogs at home, Sam Darnold on the road, banged up Viking team, that's not a good sign as far as the year to
Tommy.
Come. Tommy, what game are they going to be favored in?
Tommy, Vegas can scratch their ass. Okay. 2 years ago, they didn't think the Giants were going to be a good football team.
Right.
And they weren't supposed to win week one.
I'm not saying they can be wrong. They've been wrong in the past. They've been right more than they've been wrong.
I don't know what the line has to do with anything, though. Because you guys keep bringing it up. Like, okay, it's week one. Week one is the week in which we're all kind of figure things out. So, yeah, the Giants aren't supposed to be good. Their over-under is like six. We all know that. But obviously, we've had discussions about this team, and there's some Giant fans who think they'll be better than that.
But are the Vikings good?
I am so tired of Vegas and everybody, they know. Last year, Las Vegas, based on their preseason win total, you can write this one down, got teams wrong by three or more games.
Yeah.
That is a fourth of the league they were totally off on.
Horrible.
So stop assuming that Vegas knows this, and this is why.
One of those was the Houston Texans, which nobody could have predicted.
True.
Right. The circumstances of that situation were just perfect for D'Amico Ryans to go change it and go win. In particular, drafting the stud quarterback. Like the one stud in the draft was Houston. And then you had Bobby Slowick, the offensive coordinator, who knew how to teach young players because he just had two young players.
Right.
And Brock Purdy and what's the kid in Dallas now?
But all that proves is that who cares what Vegas says before
Vegas,
the season?
Vegas has no idea what they're talking about.
I know,
about.
But he just cited the line. You both did about the line. No, who cares what the line is?
No, my point is that
my point was, are they dogs? In your mind, should they win this game?
In my mind, if the Giants are going to have a season, like a real one.
But forget that. Forget the ifs.
They have to win the game.
Forget the ifs.
Then what's the question?
My question is, knowing the Giants, knowing the Vikings, should the Giants win this game?
In my opinion?
Yes.
Yes.
And I agree.
And the reason I lean towards that goes back to the quarterback, is the fact that they're starting Sam Darnold, who's now become a journeyman bouncing around the league. The Giants are starting what in theory is a healthy Daniel Jones, in theory, with an offensive line that's supposed to be a lot better, with playmakers that he hasn't had. Despite losing Saquon Barkley, I think it's very evenly matched. I think it's very close. These aren't two teams that I'm necessarily picking to make the postseason. But I think that what Vegas says about it, their over-under or what the spread is in this game doesn't mean any. I mean, it means something if you're going to bet on it. But it doesn't mean, like, what do they know? None of us know anything. The football season's about to start. That's the beauty of football.
Yeah.
We know nothing. We're just like...
until Sunday.
Until Sunday. And then we think we know everything, and then everything we saw was like an aberration. Or some of it was an aberration. So, I don't know. What bothers me is you implied it's fixed, and I don't like
no,
that.
No, I did not imply it's
someone
fixed.
Someone knows something. What the hell does someone
My
know?
My point is that they don't pull these spreads out of their rear end. This is a billion-dollar industry for a reason. The lines are generally accurate. Are the Chiefs favored at home? Of course they are. They're not given a point and a half. Why? Because they're better than the Ravens. What they're telling you is they don't think the Giants are better than the Ravens. Usually you're -3 at home. That's like a standard line.
Okay, so but what's your point?
So what they're telling you is that Minnesota's 4.5 points better than the Giants banged up based
Who
on...
Cares?
Based on stats, based on everything
else.
But
what does that mean in relation to them winning the game or the importance of the game?
My point is that when you look through the schedule and you try to see where can they win, what games can they win, when they're not even favored in this game, it's going to be tough sledding.
Because we already know that, though. Vegas has made the Giants over-under 6. That's not a good year. You think they're going to win 11.
Of course.
I think they're going to win 8. Tiki thinks they're going to win 9.
Yes.
Sean thinks they're going to win 7.
So we're all on the over.
So then why do we care that Vegas knows something?
It just gives you that little bit of caution and pause when you see something like that. Like if you told me a month ago, I'd said, all right, Giants going to be favoring that game. I see the line. I go, ooh, okay, that's a little interesting.
Yeah. So, it's funny because of what I don't even know what goes into the lines. I'm sure it's some analytics, some algorithm, some... injury. I have no idea what it is, but they seem to be so damn close all the time. Now, with that being said, I still stick by my thought. The Giants are supposed to win this game.
Yes.
Regardless of what the line says.
If forget the line, and right now it's 1.5. And I think I've seen it bounce back and forth over the last few weeks leading up to this. Much like the Niner Jet lines moved a little bit. Vegas knew Trent Williams wasn't going to play. Now he is playing and the lines changed, right? Mm-hmm. Here's what I know. If the New York Giants are going to have a season, a real one, not a fugazi one, where they are in the mix, in the hunt, as the graphic likes to say, come November, come December. If they're going to have a real football season that matters in New York, they have to win their game on Sunday at MetLife Stadium against the Minnesota
Vikings.
But
what it looks like is going to matter to me.
How do you think the formula needs to look? Because when I said to you they're going to win 8 games, I thought they were going to be a defensive first team that gets a great pass rush that overcomes their young secondary, and they don't even score a lot of points, but they win a lot of low-scoring tight games.
No, I mean...
Disagree with that assessment?
Yeah, because they're not a run-heavy team. This isn't a team that's invested... all of their assets into their offensive line and into their running game. I mean, think for instance, the game I'm calling this weekend, the Indianapolis Colts. And the Colts are run heavy. Mm. They are run first. Their running back is Jonathan Taylor. He's one of the top paid running backs in the NFL. Obviously, he's still young, got paid early. He's going to be a stud. Their quarterback is Anthony Richardson. They have like 6 different quarterback runs designs for him. It's amazing what they do with him. They're 3 of their top 5 highest cap hits
are offensive linemen.
Mm.
And so we know what they want to do, where they're going to build their bread or make their bread. It's going to be running the football. That's not what the Giants have done. You can tell what a team is by where they're spending their money. The Giants are trying to be a throw the ball down the field, let's be explosive as hell type of offense. Now, doing that and saying it are two very different things.
And executing
it,
yeah.
Until I see them do it, there's that little bit of, oh, man, I hope. You know, it's so... And part of that is Daniel Jones.
Yeah, but
right? Daniel Jones had, the one preseason game, the first interception, forget it. It was what it is. He should have just thrown it away. The second interception, if he throws that thing into the end zone, to the front, or even middle of the pylons, that's a touchdown for Jalen Hyatt, mm-hmm. right? He made it easy for Derek Stingley to pick that thing off. And so, like, Daniel Jones has to be able to make those type of throws. You got a faster receiver than the cornerback. Make him go chase the ball. Don't underthrow it. And so those little things I need to see happen in a game. And I expect them to happen on this Sunday. And if they do, then I'll say, you know what? I believe this is a 9-win team.
But I wonder if that identity actually comes to fruition. Because if I ask you right now, what is the strength of the New York Giants? What's the strength of them? Talent-wise, roster-wise, what is the strength of this roster?
Currently, it's their defensive front seven.
Completely agree with you. That's exactly what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm thinking, okay, that's their identity. What can be really good this year? I think they could have a really good pass rush.
Yep.
I mean, Brian Burns is here, and they paid him a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Dexter Lawrence has become one of the best interior linemen in the NFL. I think, what's his name?
Kayvon.
Yeah, I'm afraid to say his last name because I get yelled at. Kayvon Thibodeau.
Yes.
Yes! It's all Tom Thibodeau's fault. He confuses me.
It is.
Kayvon Thibodeau. Thibodeau.
Oh, my God.
Damn it. Kayvon Thibodeau showed you signs last year. Signs that he is blossoming into a potential star in this league.
He still has to get better.
I agree.
Because a lot of his sacks came against bad tackles.
That's why I said signs.
And so, but does he have the skill to do it? 100%.
Okay, so we're on the same page. If that turns out to be their identity, okay, which is what my prediction is. Mm-hmm. This is what I think is going to end up happening. It's halfway good. Then I think the offense may play to the strength, which is not taking a million shots down the field, but actually trying to win ball control. Let's not turn the ball over, low scoring games. Mm. I mean, Devin Singletary isn't Saquon Barkley,
no.
But he isn't crap either.
No, right. He finishes forward all the time, right? He's not a banger, and he's not going to, I don't know, go get 3 yards in a cloud of dust 40 times a game, but he always finishes forward, and he's great as a receiver, and he's reliable. So, but to me, I still think their offense is not going to be run heavy. Mm. I don't see it. I don't think that's what Dave wants to do.
I agree. I don't think that's what he wants to do. I don't think that's the way it's going to start, but I have a feeling that's the way it's going to finish. Mm. I'm giving you some confidence. See, I think the Giants are going to win on Sunday. And I think that when we're sitting here on Monday getting ready for Jets-Niners, there's going to be a air of confidence around here. But if they don't win on Sunday, I mean, you can back the truck up, they're dead.
Yeah.
Let's be perfectly honest. Then Monday turns into a funeral before Jets-Niners. What? What are you guys mad at me?
No, I'm wondering if Nick Mullins was the quarterback, if you'd feel the same way. Is this a Sam Darnold thing on your end here? Is there a Sam Darnold regret coming from Evan Roberts here as you took your shirt off when the Jets drafted him?
No, it has nothing to do with Sam. It has to do with, I think the Giants are going to have a better year than people think. As I just laid out why and how. Mm. May turn out to be wrong. I don't think I'll turn out to be wrong. I'm very hot when it comes to Giant predictions. But I think that's the formula to their success. But the only way, I think, for me to be right, for you to be right, if you think they're actually going to win 11 games, for Tiki to be right, the only way is it starts by winning on Sunday. You're not losing to the Vikings on Sunday, I don't think. And then, turning the season around. I think it's a tone setter the way it's been the last 2 years. We'll get your calls next, 888-808-1019. Plus, one thing I really, really, really hate about the New York Jets opening the season on Monday night against the San Francisco 49ers.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Horse rep pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.